today's episode. We have some cold cereal, cover it with human milk, and try not to think about death. All that and more coming up. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Ars Science. I'm your host, as always, Alan Collier, and joining me today is Kyle Bine.
Hey there.
And Katie Ellsworth.
Hello.
This is the fat episode, so tuck on in, because we're talking about fat, fat, fat.
Fat with a pH.
Well.
No.
Our first article today comes from Inverse.com and the University of Bath. When men exercise pre-breakfast, they burn twice the amount of fat than men who waited until after breakfast. The study authors believe that the fasting overnight is the key factor behind the increased fat burning.
So my main problem with this paper has nothing to do with the subject of the paper. So maybe we'll talk about the paper before we talk about my gripe.
That is great clickbait, and I cannot wait for that. Because I'm genuinely curious what you mean. There is a surprising amount of depth we can go in on this.
Yeah. The main takeaway from this message that morning workouts pre-breakfast won't necessarily help you lose more weight than just a morning workout, but it does have all sorts of other metabolic benefits, and that's really cool. But also, I'm not going to do it, so...
Yeah, who the fuck wants to work out in the morning before you eat breakfast?
Okay, so a couple of things here. One is that burning fat and losing weight are different things.
Yes.
Yes.
Losing weight is essentially just a matter of energy in versus energy out.
CECO.
Bless you.
It's calories in, calories out. It's the acronym used.
Oh, CECO, not spelled with a C, not I C. I was spelling it with an S in my head.
Okay, cool.
Which is why I was really confused, because I was like...
Salaries.
None of those words start with S. So anyways, so if you're inputting more energy into your body, which we measure in calories... Then you are burning through exercise, you're not going to lose weight.
No, you're going to add weight because your body has all this extra calorie energy and it's like, well, we should store this for later in case we need it.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're eating. It matters how much you're eating.
Yeah.
Because you could eat only kale, but if you eat two truckloads of kale, you're still going to gain weight.
Your body is a hoarder, okay? Your body is your friend who's like, I'm going to save this for later. We might need it. We might need it someday. You don't need it. You're never going to use it.
Never,
you know?
Not even once.
I mean,
because our bodies aren't used to the fact that... Well, our bodies aren't used to... Like, they haven't evolved to live in, like, modern, comfortable society. They're still used to, we need to survive. So if we have an excess of energy, it's like, that is fantastic. We're going to store that. And then we're going to survive these long winters. Meanwhile, you know, we're eating Big Macs in our couch and under the blankets and we're fine. But our body doesn't know that, sadly.
That's a very specific example of eating Big Macs.
I don't want to talk about it.
The benefits of the fasted workouts involve what? Insulinemia and making sure that your body uses more fat as energy than carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
However, I didn't think it was really interesting in the paper that they were just like, yes, all these benefits, blah, 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 but only for low intensity cardio.
Yeah, exercise is a really broad term.
Yeah, and then for the study, they're just like, yeah, exercise, ha, 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 but also what they meant is low intensity cardio.
Yeah.
No high intensity interval training, no strength training, no power lifting.
You want to define cardio for people?
Cardio involves doing any sort of prolonged activity that ups your heart rate.
Thank you.
Like if you do anything else on an empty stomach, you will, I don't know, probably pass out, possibly vomit, you know.
Fun stuff.
All that fun stuff.
It's just because there's different energy requirements for those kind of things.
Exactly. Whereas the reason that this helps with burning fat is because overnight your insulin levels just drop naturally because, you know, you're not actively eating, you're not actively consuming sugar, so your body doesn't need to be producing. Well, I mean, if you're sleep eating, that's a different issue and that's a different paper.
And this is what I was saying about like the title actually, I don't want to say oversimplifies it because the title does a good job of like, okay, here's the key point. But there is a lot more that we can go into here because you're essentially tricking your body into using the right resource. You mm-hmm. want it to be using your fat stores because you want to lose fat is the theory. So you're trying to trick it into using that form of energy instead of carbohydrates or a different form of energy.
Yeah.
And so when you work out in the morning, you don't have as much insulin naturally and you'll start burning fat instead of sugar or carbohydrates or whatever.
Exactly.
Well,
even that's simplified.
Yeah, yeah. Also, just because I was thinking, because I reading the article, they did not actually say that there was any proof that you were consuming more fat. Like, yes, you're burning fat for energy for that particular workout, but there was no actual corollary for losing more fat if you were doing that. So
honestly, if you're overweight or you're obese, or you know, you want to lose weight, you want to burn fat, just exercise. Like, this is sort of like fine tuning that exercise. If you're exercising, then good. That's by far the most important thing. Mm-hmm. Don't feel bad if you're eating and then exercising.
Yeah. No, you shouldn't feel bad. You should do whatever works best for you individually. The one thing they do point out too, though, is that in terms of people who are obese having a pre-breakfast workout, it actually, because it impacts the levels of insulin that you have in your body. And when you are obese, you naturally have more insulin, which isn't a good thing. It's a consequence and a side effect of obesity. This helps you regulate your insulin to more normal levels that are actually better for your health. So it can be beneficial in a situation where you are obese and you are exercising. But again, it depends on what kind of exercise you're doing.
I would also think that this kind of thing would help with reducing your risk of diabetes, because...
Yeah, because it's regulating your insulin levels. It's increasing your insulin sensitivity, so you have less insulin, but the stuff you do have is working a lot better. So,
yeah, if you are able and willing to exercise before breakfast, then yeah, go for it. Otherwise, yeah. My advice would be talk to a doctor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't just read some article on the internet and say, yeah, this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah, because that's how you get WebMD.
Yeah, and it's also like...
that's how you get cancer, according to WebMD.
Exactly.
Also, you are specific to you, so like you're going to have a unique set of circumstances that are all your own, and having someone who knows those details better and can give you a more personalized prescription is better than just, you know...
All right, health PSA now. Done. I just wanted to say one more thing about it, which was the fact that they brought up in the article that this is something that high performance athletes already are using. And that's because they are trying to optimize what types of energy they burn during what types of workout. And that's because it at like the Olympic elite level of sports, it matters. But for us regular folks who are just day to day, you know, going for a jog, it's just, you know, be healthy.
I just wanted to nitpick on part of their experimental design.
Hey, are you going to come to my thing where I was clickbaity about it and my problem with it?
So they talk about, okay, there's the pre-breakfast and the post-breakfast group, and they talk about what they served them for breakfast. And they just say, yes, there was a breakfast of cornflakes and toast. And I'm like, that's a breakfast? They specify that for breakfast, the group that was exercising after breakfast was eating cornflakes and toast.
So just pure carbs.
Just pure carbs. That's not a balanced breakfast. No, that's not a normal breakfast. Who eats cornflakes and toast for breakfast?
Fucking sad people. Kellogg's. Kellogg's, a.k.a. the guy who wanted to invent cornflakes specifically to stop teenagers from masturbating.
Yeah, that didn't work.
That's what cornflakes came from.
Yeah, I don't remember the details, but that's absolutely where cornflakes came from.
Are you supposed to masturbate into the cornflakes and then...
No. You're supposed to eat only very bland food because it's supposed to make you want to masturbate less.
Disagree.
Yeah, it was...
I mean, I think you probably want more spice in your life at that point.
That's what I was going to say, is that you don't want to be understimulated. That's not going to make you masturbate less.
So frosted flakes, that makes you masturbate less.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Frosted flakes, straight turn off.
Your life is fulfilled and you don't need to masturbate because you have those nice sugary flakes.
Mm. Yep. Today's episode brought to you by Frosted Flakes, not cornflakes.
Not cornflakes.
Fuck cornflakes. All right, can we get to my clickbait shit now?
Yes, please.
Yay. The moment we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, screw that other stuff. What's up?
Yeah.
Men. The whole thing is just about men. It's like, hey, exercising for men. This helps men. This helps men that. Men this, men that. What the fuck about women? Who the fuck knows? I don't know. Health sciences are biased towards men, and it pisses me off because they don't do studies on women.
Is there any reason this is only men? Because I also noticed that and found it really weird.
No, okay. The reason that it's only men is because health scientists genuinely like are biased towards testing on men because they are more, you know, controlled variable, because women have much more variety in hormone levels, and that affects things like insulin. And we also have different styles of fat storage and different like hormonal influences on fat storage and fat burning. So they're like, oh no, that's too complicated. It'll ruin our experimental design. So let's just do men. And that's why you end up with a fuckload of medicine that is specifically tailored towards male humans. And then all of the women are just fucking screwed and I hate it.
Yeah.
And rant.
And I don't know. I don't want to speak too much out of my ass here, but my gut says that this is probably also would work for women. I don't really see too many reasons it wouldn't, but we don't know because they didn't test it on women.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's get some women some cornflakes and send them out running.
And test their blood level.
Or send them out running and tell them, oh, there's a tasty bowl of cornflakes waiting for you afterwards, at which point they'll say, no, thanks.
Yeah. In my experience, this one thing women love, it's cornflakes. So we don't normally do this, but I'm making an exception. Normally, we only take the top three articles from Reddit, and those are the three we use for the podcast. But there was a paper, I believe came in fifth, that we were all rooting for very hard and did not make it to the top three, and I think it still deserves a mention. And it's a paper that's simply titled, Scientists Have Trained Mice to Drive Tiny Cars.
It's Stuart Little, the book, the movie, the paper.
It's great. I thought it was rats, though.
Rats, mice, whatever.
It made them happier. I actually read the article. It was great. It was great. It
made me happier.
Rats that are trained to drive cars have more life satisfaction.
Because they have freedom and independence, and they can just drive around in their little car.
And they have mental stimulation.
It lowers their commute time, too.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's a video of this. Have people seen the video of this?
Yes.
And we're using the word car
very loosely.
Yeah. Very generously. It's a, like, container. It's a jar.
It's a container, but it has wheels and also controls that make it go places.
It looks like something that would be at a go-kart derby.
Most cars tend not to have lids.
Yes, but most cars tend not to have rats driving them.
There he goes. I'll post this video on our social media at our Science Pod on Twitter. It is must-watch television. So Katie actually read the article. Kyle, did you read the article?
I got distracted by the video of rats driving. And then I watched that like four times.
They're not the best steerers. It appears to be that the jar has like wires at the front, and depending on which end they push forward on, it goes in that direction. So they're just sort of ramming their
heads. So it's very simple.
They're ramming their heads in a direction, and then the car goes that way. The best brakes.
No.
There they go.
It's more of just absence of go equals stop.
They're teaching rats to stunt drive. And soon we will have, like, rat chauffeurs who can help you escape the cops. I don't know.
That sounds lovely.
I remember this in Stuart Little, where they had to, like, do concussion testing on him because he ran to walls repeatedly. So look at him go.
Smack.
Our second paper today comes from the University of Kansas. Human milk has fat droplets surrounded by a membrane containing nutrients. In formula, these are removed. Infants who consume formula containing milk fat globule membrane score higher in tests of cognitive, language, and motor development by age 1, finds new double-blind, randomized, controlled study. Milk fat globule membrane. Good lord.
MFGM.
MFGM.
There's a reason. MFGM. There is a reason that they abbreviate it.
Yes. Yeah, also human milk.
Yeah, that was the thing that stuck to me for the entirety of reading this article. Why are you not just saying, like, man, human milk, that's a word that I do not want to listen to.
I mean, it's not wrong. That's what it is.
And I was trying to figure out why it sounded so weird. It's because we normally just say breast milk.
Yeah.
Well, we don't normally put human in front of things we eat.
Well, that's because we're not usually eating humans.
So breast, I'm going to call it breast milk because I don't want to call it human milk. Agreed?
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's what we normally call it. Human milk just sounds wrong.
It does. Not great.
Yes, we milk these humans for the vital fluids.
So it's always been said that breast milk, human milk, whatever, is better. Like breastfeeding a child is better than giving a formula. And this is providing more details on why that's the case.
Like this is a cool study because we know that breast milk is better for development stuff, but there's a lot of reasons why people don't or can't breastfeed for the full recommended six plus months or whatever, yeah. because it's, I mean, some mothers can't produce that much milk. It's challenging. It's exhausting. It's very difficult. And also a lot of them, like in some places, like they don't have sufficient maternity leave to actually be able to do that. So they have to transition their kids to formula. So knowing that there's an option where it's like, hey, we can leave this stuff in the formula. The kids still get the same benefit as if they were having breast milk, but you can, you know, go back to work, or you can take this pressure off you. Like that's good news for moms everywhere.
It is, because yay, there's moms. So much stigma involved with how you feed your child.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, it's so broken. It's like, you breastfeed your kid in public? That's shameful. You shamefully feed your baby formula and not breast milk? That's also shameful. Everything is shame.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is bullshit.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's really the whole like don't breastfeed.
How dare you feed your infant?
Breastfeed wherever you want. Nobody, if people care, then they're dumb.
Yeah, breastfeed wherever you want. Yeah. And if you can't breastfeed your kid, then you know what? That's also fine.
Yeah, and there are various reasons why people can't, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you for not turning this into breastfeed good, formula bad.
No, what this is saying is, hey, breastfeed better, formula with this even better, or at least as good. So let's do
if
that.
If you can breastfeed, breastfeed.
Yeah.
Like that's.
But if you can't.
If you can't, well, then let's.
Formula with these hormones in it and with the membrane, the Mifgum in it is better than just the basic formula.
And specifically bovine.
Excuse me, does this fake human milk have Mifgum in it?
Yes.
Yeah, so if we're going to have formula, and we need formula because, as we've said, some people can't breastfeed, we might as well make it the best formula as possible.
Exactly. Yes. So add that Mifgum.
Yeah. So the last article we said, the exercise one, not the rat one, we said like there's lots of depth and detail we go into. I don't feel like not as much on this one. And that's fine. Yeah. I'm just letting you know. So, but there's one thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was curious about how they did this particular study.
Mm-hmm.
And I assumed that it was just a matter of finding kids who had been given formula and finding kids or babies, finding babies who had been given formula and finding babies who had breastfed, and then running various tests for cognitive abilities.
Yeah.
But it seems as if they have enrolled 451 infants in a multi-center, double-blind, randomized, controlled clinical trial.
Which is just a wild sentence.
That implies, that's jargon heavy and fancy. That is super cool sounding, but, you know.
What does it mean?
Nobody knows.
Katie,
tell us what it means.
What it means is that nobody knows. The researchers and the parents don't know which type of formula their kid is on. So that's what double blind means. Randomized means that they just completely randomized who got what. And it was multi-center. So that just meant that it was held in a bunch of different places.
Right. So let's think about this, because there's a chance that scientists came to you and said, we're going to feed your kid fake milk and see if they're dumb. Oh, they are dumb. All right. See you later.
Well, they didn't know what the outcome was going to be, right? They just wanted to see if there was a difference. Now that they know that there's a difference in cognitive ability, they're going to be like, oh, we're not going to do that no more. Or there'll be more ethics about it. But they didn't know that there were actually going to be.
We're going to feed your child a random liquid and see how smart they are.
Kind of. And that's, as we all know, anytime you're working with any living creatures, and especially infants, you've got to go through an ethics board where a bunch of people sit and judge your study and make sure that it's up to code. And
on the other hand, for this situation, it would be, we're going to be feeding your kid either this commercially available formula that everyone has already used and it's not got any side effects, or this one that we've added something new to.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised this got through ethics. And I was really surprised when I was reading. I was like, how did this possibly pass any ethics board? And then I got to the sentence, or the end of the sentence, that this was done at three sites in China. And I'm wondering if that made it easier.
Quite possibly.
Quite possibly.
Can you guys think of anything other recent events involving China? Because I can't.
None
to mind.
None at all? Nothing that has anything to do with, gene editing of babies?
None. That too. That wasn't even the not happening thing that I was thinking of.
No, I know, but that was the one that was scientifically relevant.
China, stop being China for like 5 seconds. So I don't know. I don't want to say for sure that this was done in China to make it easier to get it done, but
But
I don't know if it was done in China to make it easier to get it done. I feel like it was just a study that was done in China that found something interesting.
That's entirely possible, too. I don't want to, like, just throw shade at China. I mean, I kind of do.
No, because they will find you.
Yeah, they'll, yeah.
Speaking of the, because you mentioned that the way you thought that they did the methodology where they took kids who had been breastfed and had been formula tested, have they actually done studies like that to see if there's long-term effects of
formula versus breast milk? I'm 100% sure that has to have been done. But this study was focusing just on two different types of formula.
Yeah.
There was no compare. I don't think there was a comparison to kids who were being fed breast milk.
Yes, because I guess we should clarify that. This was not the two groups here were not breast milk versus formula, because it's already established that breast milk is better. This was formula versus Mufkin formula. Formula
Prime.
Yes. Yeah. Transform and roll out.
Yes.
This was Mifkin formula versus non-Mifkin formula, and Mifkin formula was better. Bovine Mifkin, which I don't think makes a difference. Do you want to explain what Mifkin actually is?
It's a protein membrane that separates or surrounds lipids in natural milk.
Lipids being fat.
It's they've basically just added a membrane protein and all of the other nutrient/other things that are part of this membrane. They're actually not entirely sure what part of it is the beneficial part. They're just like, we know it's in this membrane, so let's just throw the whole membrane in.
They're just mimicking. Yeah. We're getting a better idea of what milk is, breast milk or human milk, and now we're better able to mimic that.
Yes, and that was. But I like the fact that the first like 6 months of development were just self-reported. So, like, they didn't, like,
not
bring
in
six-month-old babies.
No.
Yes, baby says, I am good at smart.
No one's writing that down, yeah.
I also don't know how reliable that is, though, because what parent's going to be like, you gave my kid this liquid and now they're dumb. This is the dumbest five-month-old I've ever encountered. Yeah.
In my experience, parents greatly overestimate the intelligence of their offspring.
Yes. My baby smiled at me today. That means they're the most intelligent, handsomest, beautiful baby ever.
As they eat the carpet. Our third article today comes from The Guardian. The brain shields us from existential fear by categorizing death as an unfortunate event that only befalls other people. Being shielded from thoughts of our future death could be crucial for us to live in the present. I want to briefly talk about how I love how this article starts. Because it's got some flair to it. The first sentence is warning. This story is about death. You might want to click away right now. And then it tells you like, well, this is because your brain doesn't like dealing with death. And I just appreciate that little bit of flair.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the typo though, because it's right at the beginning.
I don't like that I haven't noticed it.
Yeah, it's not really a typo. It's just a lack of the word the. Because they say doubting death, how our brains shield us from mortal truth. Brain seems to categorize death. Not because it could be to categorize death, or the brain seems to categorize death, but nope, just brain.
Maybe it's supposed to be Brian.
Damn it, Brian.
My brain deals with grammar the same way it deals with death, by ignoring it and assuming it doesn't apply to me.
Yes. You it's an unfortunate thing that only happens with other people.
Yeah. Imagine dealing with death. I literally can't.
Imagine dealing with grammar. Alan literally can't.
Okay, so I feel like Kyle's got some thoughts on this. Go get him.
Well, no, it's so hard to. It's the brain and it's people, and people are very different and people are very complex, and it's so hard to be like, yes, this is the way the brain works, because we don't know how the brain works. Brain is a messed up jumble of wires and things, and it just. I don't know.
The brain is the only organ that talks about itself.
Yes.
I didn't think that this paper was actually that bad, though, because I read through it, and they're not making any claims that are saying this is how the brain works. It's just like, this is a very interesting correlation that we found in how people reacted to something.
That's the trick, is that brain studies, like, it's such a like a new frontier, and we're just scratching the surface of understanding even slightly how brains work, that's fine. Like, we got to start somewhere. But if you start saying, like, it's this or it's that definitively, that's where the red flags come up. Because I don't think we can say anything really all that definitively right now. This is a really cool concept that might be true and has some, you know, potential evidence to say that's true. There's so little we know about brains to, like, I'm not saying this is 100% true. It's a cool idea.
I mean,
though.
I don't think there's any reason to doubt what they're saying in this study, though.
Me neither. There's just so many, like, the knowledge gap on brains in general is just so big that I just shrink away from ever saying anything with that much confidence about brains.
Okay, fair.
Yeah,
your brain shrinks away from a lot of things. Your brain's in a protective cocoon.
Yeah, yes. Bubble brain.
Which is what this article is about.
Yep.
Yes. So the experimental design they followed is they monitored brain signals and they put faces and words that were related to death up on the screen. And they were like, okay, here's this random stranger's face and the word funeral and this random stranger's face and the word burial. And then there's your face and a word related to death. And your brain's just like, nope.
I mean, that would have concerned me if I'd been doing a study and they're like, we can't really tell you what the study, they can't tell you that this is what they're going to do because that's going to affect it. So you're just like,
no,
just
but
like,
they also started, you missed the part where they started with people's faces and unrelated words. And they'd show one face a bunch of times and then a different face the last time. And then that was how they tracked the registration of surprise or alarm in your brain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they wanted to see if people had an alarm response to seeing their own face with death related words, and they did not. They were like, no, that's not something that's happening to me, therefore why would I be scared? It's not scary.
And this makes sense.
We have a biological imperative to stay alive.
Yes.
Yeah, and, so. And also, like, if you were just constantly if you were constantly worried about your own death and you, like, found ways that you could die in every action you take, you would just never do anything.
That's welcome anxiety. To anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, this is why only some people have anxiety, not literally every human being on the planet. This is why people go skateboarding and, you know, bungee jumping, because we're able to put that death part of us aside and say, now we're fine. Sometimes too much.
I would never do any of those things.
See, I would.
And you said I was the bubble brain.
No, I think it's an interesting study because it also checks out with a lot of other stuff that we've talked about how the brain wants to protect itself from things that are new or scary, right? Because how the brain has, like, this concept, and, like, if you give something that takes away a wall in your concept house, then it's just like, no, I'm not going to accept that. I must protect my little concept house.
Yeah.
I will live forever.
Yeah. I'm right about everything, because if I'm wrong about things, then that's bad. And brains don't like being wrong. I think we have mentioned this before, but brains really don't like being wrong.
Yep. To the point that they will completely and utterly ignore facts.
Yeah.
In order to just continue being right.
Which explains a lot about a lot.
It does. It really
When you really think about it. If we could figure out a way to sort of untrigger that, it'd go a long way. But not
Fact.
There yet.
We're all going to die.
Yeah, we're all going to die. Although there is, like, even then, there's that still part of me was like, I mean, somebody could figure out immortality in the next 60 years. I know they won't, but, like, maybe you'll die. I'm living forever.
I just, I respond with apathy. I'm going to die.
Apathy. Yeah. Nihilism. Death begins at conception. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right.
That's the nihilist pro-life.
Edgy teenager here, Katie Ellsworth.
So they go on to talk about how this kind of feeds into, like, a death-phobic society, which, sick people in hospitals, elderly people in homes, because we don't really want to think about death, and it's just,
Yeah, that was a...
I thought that was interesting.
It was interesting. It was... That felt like a bit of a...
Stretch?
A stretch, yeah. Reading that, I was like, I mean, sick people go in hospitals because that's where there's advanced treatment and professionals who can...
However, I think that what it really meant is the fact that because sick people and elderly people are somewhere else and we're not personally intimately exposed to death in our day-to-day lives, like, whereas, like, I don't know, like, a couple centuries ago, like, if your elderly relative was dying, it was in your one-room house, so, like, you got to see it happen, like, you knew it happened. Yeah. I think that was more what they're saying. Like, we've become more death-phobic because we are not seeing and experiencing that on an individual basis.
Yeah, it's not that we're putting people in hospitals because we don't want to see them. It's that because they're in hospitals, we don't see them.
I wonder how YOLO culture feeds into this, though. And I'm sorry to bring up YOLO, but...
Good segue.
So this is a non-sequitur.
Well, I'm just thinking, I wonder if it's like a... And maybe it's just the people I surround myself with, but if it's like a generational thing, because most of the people I relate to and frequently associate with, it's... There's, like, an understanding, like, yeah, we are going to die one day, so let's live our lives now, because might as well live a good life and be happy while I'm here.
I feel like a lot of people say that. I don't know how many people actually act on that. Yeah. It's very easy for me to say, yeah, we're only alive once, and then I'm going to spend the rest of the day watching football and playing video games. So,
I mean, you're living your best life.
I am. It's going to be a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting to think about that. And then there was the sentence at the very, very end that I really, really enjoyed. In modern societies, people embraced what he calls the escape treadmill, where hard work, pub sessions, checking mobile phones, and buying more stuff meant people were simply too busy to worry about death.
I don't know. A lot of these are like editorials and opinions from this guy that I don't know have any sort of basis in much.
Yeah, escape treadmill.
Yeah, it's an interesting phrase.
I liked it. I thought it was silly.
It is a bit silly, and it comes across a little bit of, like, phone bad.
Yeah. I half expected, like, that last sentence to end with, like, I imagined him saying in a spooky voice, like, however, it's not a solution to the problem itself, so we need to keep escaping. Dot, dot, dot. Like, it just felt like...
Because there isn't a solution to death. You just die, and then you're dead.
Yeah.
That's the solution.
Yeah, the real solution is that you just accept that it's going to be a thing that happens. But like I think the big thing here is that people don't dwell on it.
I just don't know if I see it as escapism. It's for me, it's more like, you know what? I'm going to die. There's nothing I can do about it. So why worry?
Yeah, that's the thing is like escapism sort of implies that there is a solution you could be doing that you're ignoring. There's no solution. Yeah. You're going to die.
Yeah, I'm going to die. So
breastfeed your kids and exercise before breakfast.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll die thinner and more attractively.
I think the real thing is we're all going to die, so we should spend our time watching rats drive tiny cars.
And that's all the time we have today. Before you die, why not check us out on Twitter at rsciencepod. That's O-U-R sciencepod. We'll post all three of these articles, and you can comment and tell us what you felt about them. Thanks for listening. For Kyle and Katie, I was Alan, and we'll see you next week.